welcome to another episode of Journey to the Rise. I'm your host, Lucretia. What do you do when you find yourself feeling a little lost in life? Alexander Laredo found himself turning to a lifetime skill and focusing his energy into a newly founded hobby of woodworking. Yet woodworking is an isolating craft. You spend a lot of time alone. Working alone in his garage, the worries of life began to creep in, and that is when he began to turn to making videos of his woodworking projects and journey. What started with one purpose began to take a new path, an entire different life of its own. The next thing Alexander knew, he began to get a following on YouTube with his channel, The Blessed Carpenter. Our conversation gets into the depths of the journey that Alexander has been on, and buckle up, because we are about to take quite the ride. Please welcome my guest, The Blessed Carpenter, Alexander Laredo.
Today we talk with a gentleman who has been sharing his journey in woodworking and started to put his path on YouTube. And with a very humble beginning, he shares how anyone can get started in woodworking or any dream that they may have with a no or low budget. Alex, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, my pleasure. It's been fun watching you on YouTube, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation. So I just want to kick it off. Where did you grow up?
In Lansing, Michigan, for the most part. A lot of my childhood I spent up north in Wolverine, Michigan, on summer times in the woods. And I grew up a little bit in Gary, Indiana.
Nice. So all over kind of in the Midwest, mainly.
Yeah.
So was there anything, do you feel, in your childhood that your upbringing helped you develop into who you are today?
Every aspect of my upbringing helped develop me into who I am today, for sure.
Yeah?
Every time, I feel like the butterfly effect is very real on everything, like your experiences that you have and the things that you go through. A butterfly flaps his wings on one side of the world and it causes a tidal wave on the other side of the world type of deal.
Yeah.
I feel like everything shaped me, for sure.
Yeah. And what was, like, your home life like? Were you, like, building things as a kid, or, like, what was life like as a kid for you?
As a kid, playing outside a lot.
Yeah.
Growing up, I was always between my mom's, my dad's, and my grandparents. And when I went to my mom's side, I would be with my aunt and uncle. So when I was over there, we would play video games, and we weren't allowed to play outside type of deal. Mm-hmm. And then when I was at my grandma's, I was able to ride my bike and disappear with my friends all day, every day. And with my dad's, I did a lot of fishing and outdoors type of stuff. And when I was with my grandpa, we would fix stuff and build stuff and work on the property up north. And that's kind of where I got my builder side of things. But
yeah, that's really cool that your grandpa gave you that guidance. So after high school, like, where did life lead you?
After high school, life led me. So I was kind of a bad kid. I was completely a different person when I was a kid. I was a terrible kid. I was always in trouble. And if I wasn't in school, I was having to go to jail from high school. So, like, I did a lot of, like, how you would do work release. I did that for school for years. Summer vacations, spring breaks, Christmas break vacations, after school, weekends, I would have to spend in jail. So I got off of that graduated from high school. I was actually on two life probation sentences as a child, and when I graduated was when they let me off of that. So my life completely changed after high school. And after high school, I started my first business when I was 18, marketing and merchandising, LC marketing and merchandising, and I was subcontracted through Atlantic Coast Merchandising, which is the largest merchandising company in America.
Oh, wow.
And they subcontracted me for all of Michigan, Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, and Wisconsin. And I did really well, actually, really quickly. And I hired all my friends and gave them all jobs and paid them all really well. And everybody got enough money for cars and houses. And then they quit on me and I couldn't find employees. And I was trying to do, like, the recruiting and the hiring and the interview processes at coffee shops and Beaners and Big B's and all those good places, Starbucks, and just meet people there and try to, like, set up interviews for the whole day. And I I was unable to keep that workflow because I just had so much work. And at one point, I had like 18 employees. And that kind of took off. And then I just sat around. I paid all my rent and I got 5 acres on the Looking Glass River here. And I sat there for a whole year and didn't do anything. Just enjoyed nature. And
Yeah.
after that, when I was about for I settled down there for a year, and then I started a few other companies. I started a record label, a security company. I tried a few different things, and I did that until I was about 23, and then I had a child.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and
That's pretty
then
impressive from 18 to 23 to make all of that happen.
yeah, I was definitely a go-getter and way too ambitious for my age, for sure. I've been like that my whole life.
Yeah, that's awesome. So when you turned 18 and they released you from that life sentence of probation, like what do you think changed in you to just take a different path?
I was sick of being living in trouble and sitting in a jail cell forever. I was missing out on life. All these other kids, I didn't have social media. Social media is one of the things that got me in trouble with MySpace, and I was indicted over MySpace for, or no, I was looking at being indicted over MySpace because I was posting pictures of a lot of money as a teenager, and it started an investigation that led to a bunch of bull crap. And I just was not trying to be in trouble anymore and not trying to hang out and play with those people anymore and just live a different life. I know what that life brought me, and I wanted something different. And I was a heavy drinker. I did a lot of drinking. I just stopped drinking actually July of 2023. I drank my whole life. I was a really bad alcoholic. And I just had to stop living like that.
Yeah.
So from 18, it was a big shift because I was actually off of probation and able to do things without getting in trouble. So I wasn't ever able to really freely be a teenager. So I think I kind of went a little crazy for a second when they let me go when I was 18. And then I had a lot of life experiences and I just settled down. I don't know if it comes with age or I got it all out of my system or what, but definitely changed. I didn't want to
Maybe.
live like that no more.
Yeah, maybe a little bit of both. And congratulations on recognizing that alcohol didn't have a place in your life. There's people who are twice, three times your age who still haven't recognized that it doesn't belong. So I'm really proud of you. That's amazing. So your grandpa started, taught you some things around his place, but when did you start getting interested in woodworking?
So I got into the construction field when I was like 18. I wanted to get a job legally and stay home and not travel. I was doing a lot of traveling. I built every PetSmart store like east of Mount Rushmore. And
Wow.
every day was a different city for 4 years. And I was living out of hotels. And I did that a lot. Kind of just look at that actually before I was 18 as a teenager. And trying to run from probation and just do the they I was trying to stay one move ahead. I was a different city every day and they couldn't keep up with me. Get in trouble. It was stupid. But I got a job in construction as a laborer for flat roofing, commercial flat roofing. And it was the only job that I could get being absconding from probation. Like if you'd run a background check at any official company with an HR, you'll get flagged. And the company won't hire you if you go for a major company. So I had to work for owner-operated, basically construction companies, guys who were looking for muscle, and that was grunt
Sure.
work. And I got into it like that, and just meeting all those people and being around people who are building and stuff. I kind of did that for ever. It was just where I go to. I could always just be a laborer, and so I acquired tools. I never really built anything though, or got into building stuff. And then I got into framing houses and doing stick work carpentry for like the stud work of houses. And that was a lot of fun. And that's kind of where I first started really building and learning speed squares and measurements and playing with saws and lumber and stuff like that. And from there, I just they would show up on when the phones started picking up on the stuff you talk about, and they do like geared advertising. Started seeing woodworking channels and stuff pop up on YouTube, and I was always watching videos of people carving and spinning wood and making things, and I just always thought that it would be a lot of fun. I really have always been a smoker. I've smoked since I was like 8 years old, and I've always wanted to smoke out of these pipes since I was a little kid. Since I've seen 101 Dalmatians when I was little, when he's waiting for the Dalmatian to be born, he's like this. I know since then that I'm gonna smoke one of those. And Sherlock Holmes, I've always wanted a Sherlock Holmes pipe. So I seen a guy make those with in his wood shop, and that's actually made me want to start the wood shop. And
Oh,
I
wow.
just didn't have the tools to make my own tobacco pipe, so that's what originally I started it for. And then I started acquiring tools, and I still haven't made the pipe. I got the wood that I need, and now I finally just now got the tools to make it, and I just haven't gotten to it yet. I've been busy doing orders and other stuff. People found out that I do woodworking. I've just been busy, but that's the original what got me
Yeah.
into it.
That's super fun. And you speak pretty highly of your wife. How did you two meet?
So we met through a mutual best friend. One of my good drinking buddies is her best friend from kindergarten, and she was always trying to hook us up for years. And I would look at, she showed me her picture on social media, and she just looked so out of my league. I'd be like, there's no way.
Oh, oh.
And then when COVID hit, they closed everything down for a long time. And when they opened the bars back up, we all went to the bar. And I don't go to bars. I never went to bars. I never liked going to bars. I would drink at home. I get in trouble.
Yeah.
But we had all been locked down for quarantine for so long, so I met him at the bar. And the second we locked eyes, she was like, "I like him." And
Oh.
we met, we hung out, and we got married a month later.
Oh
I
my
knew
gosh.
right away, 100%.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What makes her special to you?
Everything. She is not. So I was a terrible child. I was a terrible young man. I was a complete womanizer, a man whore, terrible person. And she was completely different than everybody I've ever met ever in my entire life. Sorry.
That's
And
okay.
she was just completely different. And like, so when quarantine hit, when COVID first hit, I met her in COVID. It was the beginning of COVID, and we met in June. Her birthday is the same exact date as my grandma's birthday, and my
Oh,
grandma's
wow.
the one who raised me the most out of everybody.
Yeah.
And their birthdays are the same, and they're my two favorite ladies. But it was right when COVID hit, I have a daughter, my oldest daughter. Her mom was working at the courts at the time. And we have a really bad relationship with sharing our child, and like I completely destroyed this woman's feelings, and I feel terrible about it. But she's held a grudge against me for the last 10 years. When COVID hit, she worked at the courts, and she got an emergency ex parte court order, stripping all my rights to see my child and talk to my kid and like
Oh
be any kind of
no.
part of her life at all. And an emergency ex parte court order has some kind of like attachment to it because it's an emergency court order. So there's supposed to be some quick kind of, we have to go to court, or there's a conciliation or a mediation, or they're gonna address this quickly. But because it was COVID and everything was shut down, and she got it through the day after the court shut down, so I couldn't fight it, appeal it, no nothing. When the courts opened months later, it would have been so long. They were like, "You don't understand. You have no rights to a child." And I'm like, "That's not possible. Like, this isn't right. I'm her dad. I've taken DNA, this, then." They're like, "You don't understand. In the court's eyes, you're not a father. You don't have a kid." And I'm
Oh
like,
my
"That's not possible.
gosh.
Like, that's not like." It took me 3 years to reverse this. And because there was no court order allowing this woman, making her let me talk to my kid, they live right down the street. I go knock on the door, they call the police on me and have me escorted out, and they hide my daughter in the basement, hide her in the backyard, and not let her
Oh
see me.
no.
I show up on Christmas and they took off, and then they put a blanket over her head and ran her into a house. I'm like, "Dude, I'm just here to give her Christmas present, tell her Merry Christmas." And there
Right.
was a bunch of drama and craziness, but I almost drank myself to death. And immediately from, so that happened March 23rd, 2020. I met my wife June 19th. By 4th of July, I was in the hospital, and I've never been in the hospital. I was the healthiest, strongest person. I'm 80 pounds light right now. I'm usually a bulky, muscular, I've worked construction all life. And so I've never been hospitalized. I never took Tylenol. I never would even take ibuprofen, nothing like that. Like, I don't, I'm a very strong person. And I almost drank myself to death and ended up in the hospital on right after 4th of July for alcohol poisoning. And they wouldn't let anybody visit you in the hospital because of COVID.
Sure,
and
yeah.
You had to be married. So I lied to them and told them that was my wife and not my girlfriend. And everybody looked at me way differently. Like, everybody was like, huh? And everybody was, like, treating me differently. And I really liked that because I was like, I was, excuse my language. I don't know if I can cuss on here or not.
Yes, you can.
I was a punk ass fuck boy, like 100% total piece of crap. And like, when I told them I was married, everybody looked at me differently and treated me a little differently. Like, I felt like a grown man. It's not like, much like, no, my wife is here. You know what I'm saying? And really loved her. Everybody that I've ever been with liked me for the stuff that I provided, things that I could give to them, and stuff that I was a very popular person, and I was a very fun person in the wrong ways. And if you were into that kind of life, I was the best person to be around, but people didn't really like me for me. They liked me for what I was doing and the stuff that I had and what I could provide for them. And I was at my lowest point in life. I was giving up. I was pretty much, I kept running off into the middle of the woods to duck off, throw up and die. And I was throwing up so much blood and intestines. I drank like 2 gallons of tequila and was trying to drink myself to death and duck off and die, honestly. And I didn't even know this girl, and I didn't have anything to offer her. And I was pretty broke. We were out of work. They made me stop working for COVID, and I was getting paid hourly. I wasn't like on a salary getting benefits or collecting unemployment. I've never been that type of person to collect any kind of benefits or from the government or anything. And so she liked me for me at my weakest, lowest point, and was taking care of me in the hospital and spending her days in the hospital. I hate hospitals, and I'm sure everybody hates hospitals, but like, she was there for me, and I just couldn't thank her enough and didn't want to lose it.
Aww. That's really sweet. Well, I'm glad you stuck through it, and I'm glad she came into your life, and I'm so glad that you're still here with us.
I'm so thankful that I met her. I wouldn't be here without her.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Alexander shares moments in his life when he truly thought his life was over.
Imagine walking waist deep in a field of flowers while taking in an endless view of beautiful blue sky and clouds. Stargazer Farms WI is located in northwestern Wisconsin, offering flowers, vegetables, special events, and more. From stargazing parties to bridal flower parties, flower bars, bridal flower buckets, and a variety of special events like brunch on the farm, take a moment to escape from the chaos of life. Take a breath on a quiet farm where the breeze can clear your head and the peace can cleanse your soul. Come find a sense of peace and calm at Stargazer Farms. Come for the flowers. Stay for the stars. To find out more, go to www.stargazerfarmswi.com. And for long-form content, check out their YouTube channel at Stargazer Farms WI. One moment you're watching them waver while they walk. Then the next thing you know, they're 18 and walking away, all grown up. 18 years felt like 18 minutes. Don't let those fleeting moments get lost. Take time to book your memories with Girl Boss Photography. Girl Boss Photography offers 3 different packages to meet your needs. The ultimate senior session will make you feel as special as you deserve. Be treated like a princess with hair and makeup, fully guided photo session, behind-the-scenes photos and videos that will create a day that you'll never forget. In the ultimate senior session, we capture the special time in your life with a memory keepsake video. This video will be cherished for years and can be shared with friends and family over and over again. Don't let your senior year go without experience the ultimate senior session with Girl Boss Photography. To find out more, go to www.girlbossphotography.com and get your photo session booked today. We continue with our conversation with Alex and how his YouTube channel has evolved beyond its initial intention. And you've been really open and honest about feeling isolated and alone. Like, can you share with us, like, how is it causing you to feel, like, what was causing you to feel, like, isolated and alone? And I just think it's brave that you share that.
I mean, I've always been a super strong person, never vulnerable. We're never showing weakness, ever, ever. And I've gone through a lot since, a lot of embarrassment, I guess, and like, since my daughter's mother took off with my daughter, I never had social media, so nobody ever knew my business, ever. And I wouldn't take pictures as a kid because I was doing really, really bad things, and I didn't want any witnesses, any evidence. I had a buddy who, he owed some people money, and they came from Mexico with pictures looking for, like, to his family, like, I need a picture of him. And he didn't have no picture, thank God. And I was living that kind of life, and I wouldn't take any pictures with nobody, no nothing. I didn't like pictures. I didn't like any nothing like that. When I started my social media for the first time, I got in a lot of trouble for the first time after my daughter's mother left since I was a kid. And I made some really bad decisions and almost threw my life away pretty badly, in a bad way. It was a self-defense thing, but I shot a guy in 2016. And I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. Shooting the guy is not what ruined my life. It was where I was at and what came to light of what I was doing. And it was, I was cheating on my daughter's mom with her best friend. And, like, I was just being a scumbag. And I was doing the medical marijuana thing at the time. And I had just opened up a dispensary and money was really good. I was 23 years old. I had, like, $200,000 in cash. I was just completely out of my mind and not living right. And I was trying to help this person. She called me at 4 a.m. and said that she needed help. Her neighbor was going crazy and beat up all the neighbors. And he choked his dad out with a shotgun. And he keeps getting away from the police and coming back to her door and kicking her door and trying to kick the door. I said, call the police. And she said, I called him 3 times. He keeps getting away. And I was like, if I come over there, then I'm going to handle it my way, and you can't say anything. She said, okay. And I went over there, and like a stupid 23-year-old punk kid thinking he's tough. And the guy showed up, and I was trying to be cool with him, honestly. I wasn't trying to be, I don't know, tough guy stuff. He showed up, and he was ringing the doorbell, and I went out there, and I tried to talk to him, told him just to go away. And he was kept saying that he needed his shoes, and I was like, dude, you're wearing shoes. He was really messed up. I've lived a pretty street ghetto life. I know drugs and alcohol. Did not know. I couldn't tell what that guy was on. Honestly, what he was doing, but yeah. He was on something. And he was 6'3", 280 pounds. I'm 5'9", 190 pounds, and he had beaten up everybody that night. And I had my CPL and my gun was registered. And at first, I gave him a cigarette, trying to talk him down. Like, dude, calm down. You're doing great. You got away from the police 3 times. Wherever you keep going to, go there and go to sleep, dude. When you wake up, come back. Everybody hates you in here right now. They're calling the police on you every time they see you. Dude, go away. And he was like, he was cool about it for a second. He was laughing. And then he smoked his cigarette. And then he asked for another cigarette. And I said, yeah. And I was going to give it to him. And then I noticed that his posture changed. And I grew up fighting my whole life. So I was like, back up, dude. And then he grabbed a rope off of the side of the building. And he was like standing back. So I pulled a 357 Magnum out. I said, dude, you really don't want to have this conversation right now. Please, let's not do this. And I threw him a cigarette. And he's like, dude, just go away. But yeah. I couldn't get buzzed into the apartment complex that we were at, because if she would have buzzed the door, he would have stormed the door and got in.
Right.
So I was like, dude, you got to go. And I had talked him out of it. Like, we had gone through this about to fight a couple of times, and I talked him down. I was like, dude, I really don't want to shoot you right now, dude. Like, I don't want to do this to you. You look like you got your whole life ahead. You're just fucked up right now. Please go somewhere. And he was like, you're not going to shoot me, because if you're going to shoot me, you would have shot me already. And he went to attack me with the rock, and I pistol whipped him. And he flew back across the thing, and you can tell, I could always tell when somebody wants to fight, because I fought so much. And he had it like a shirt over his head, and he had it covering his face, and he was looking at me, and then he's tossed it up again. I said, dude, if I up this pistol, it's going to be the last thing you see, and I really don't want to do this to you. Please don't make me do this. And he thought about it. I said, dude, you're really going to make me do this to you? And I started to raise a gun, and then he took off running and said no. And I was so thankful for that. And I'll show you the laugh. Like, I had no business even being there. And, like, a couple hours later, I get woke up by the girl. I'm sleeping on a couch. And she was like, he's kicking in the door right now. He's kicking in the door right now. And I was like, what? And she was like, he's just like, and it's like 5:30, 6 in the morning. So I had the pistol under the pillow. So I said, open the door. And she was going to the door, and she was like, I got to pee. And she went running to the bathroom. And it was like scared the piss out of her. Apparently, I don't know. But I went to look at the people, and this guy had a shotgun and a samurai sword.
And
hitting the door with the samurai sword, and the shotgun is sitting up against the wall like this in the back of the hallway. And I said, go the fuck away, dude. And I'm screaming to her, go away right now. Go away. Don't touch that fucking gun. And he grabbed the gun. He racked the gun in the hallway. So I'm looking at him. I shot him right through the door. I didn't open the door. I'm not nothing. Like, I was like, I got kids. I'm going home to my daughters. Like, I'm not playing this game with you. So, yeah. So that happened. And then I told her to call the police immediately. And I was going to go outside and see what happened with this guy. And I've taken the CPL class 3 times. I love guns. I've grown up with guns. I did USPSA pistol tournament, national shooting, like how people do softball and bowling leagues. I did gun leagues, and yeah. I love that. And so I took the CPL class 3 times. I knew what to do. I was a stupid kid, and the ghetto just came out of me real fast. And when the police started flooding in, the police might as well go first. I walk outside. And this, I've been following a blood trail. I've hunted my whole life. This guy, it was middle of July, and he disappeared. So I just, he had a shotgun. I had a pistol. So I was, when I seen the blood trail going through the grass, I like ducked back a little bit, and I was just waiting for a leaf to crinkle or a twig to snap to know where he was. And I sat there like this, and I was just waiting. And the police start flooding in. And when the police flooded in, he had caused a ruckus in this place like 3 times that night. He had like beat up the neighbors. He choked his dad out with that shotgun, apparently. And the police were looking for him 3 times that night at this place. And when they showed up for the 4th time, they came with like all the riot gear and all the, like, they were ready to come. And yeah, they came flooding in, and they drew all the guns on me. But I was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm smoking a cigarette. I said, what are you doing to me? You're just the wrong guy. You know why I didn't? Like, I should have never done that. But like, police wrote me wrong, and the authority, and just everything from my childhood and my past, I didn't want nothing to do with it. So they took my gun away as I see the police coming down the road. I put my gun away, and then they came up with the guns drawn, and I was like, you guys got the wrong guy. I said, there's a giant ass guy running around here with a shotgun, beating people up, choking people out. Yo, be careful, gentlemen. He's armed. And then the police are going to windows and doors like this. And I'm like, whoa, 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 gentlemen. Before you guys go out in a blaze of glory, I got the store to open up here in a couple minutes. Can they get out here, please? So I'm walking in the door, and I'm like, you guys, we should be able to. I get in my lane. So someone was pulling up. They tried to pull me over. And again, I just pulled over, but it was a different part of my life. Yeah, I had a really fast car. And I took off on him. And I had my taillight spray painted black, and I knew where I was, and there was a hill. So I was losing him. And I made it down the hill, and there was a street right there that had no street lights on it. We were kind of in country roads, and they were still coming up the hill. So when I got to the bottom and turned right, they just kept going. They thought that I had lost them because my taillights were blacked out. So I turned the corner, turned my car off, and I was in a black Lincoln with all black everything. They couldn't see nothing. So, choop, 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 down the country roads. And I was just like, I just got home. And I remember, I was a very atheist person. I remember telling God, as soon as I got home, God, let me get away with this one last time. I swear I'll never do this again. So then I got a call from a detective, and he said, Alex Laredo? And I was like, yeah. He said, "Hey, this is Detective so-and-so, and he said, we heard you were involved in a shooting up here," and I was so scared because the bullets that I had in this gun were high-velocity 357 rounds, and they stopped making them in 1996. They shoot through bulletproof vests, they shoot through engine blocks, and they're high velocity. So I didn't shoot straight across because we were on the second floor, and I didn't want to shoot through the door, through him, through the next door, through
Oh,
the next apartment.
sure.
So I shot like this going down because the layout of the apartments, we were on the second floor. The bullets, if they go through the floor, they're going to go down into the hallway of the first floor. And it was like 5:30 in the morning. I just prayed nobody was out there. So I shot down like this, and my thought was, where did that bullet go the whole time? I wasn't concerned about that guy. I wasn't concerned about everything else. I was concerned that somebody innocent or something, that bullet went into a random house and somebody really got hurt. And so I asked the detective, I said, "Is anybody dead?" He said, "Well, that's what we want to talk to you about. We need you to come back up here right now." And I was like, "Oh shit." And my whole heart just like just sank. And I was like, "Dude, I've seen First 48. I'll be up there with my lawyer." And I hung up on him. And I called my dad, and my dad and I didn't really have a relationship before this too close. I mean, we had a relationship, but like it was a very troubled relationship. And I had a lot of issues with my dad because I didn't really know or give him a chance of who he was. And I thought that he was not the best dad. And he is the best dad. But I called him, and my dad has always wanted me to have a job and just work a regular job. And my dad got in a lot of trouble with my mom when he was younger. They had me when they were kids, like 17, 16. And my dad started working at as a baker, baking cakes. And he got a job and just never stopped going to work. He stopped living in the streets. My dad was a gang leader before that and running around, running amok. Like, I hear all these stories about my dad, and everybody's like, "Your dad's still working?" And I'm like, "Yeah," because they can't believe that he went to work one day and just never stopped going to work. My dad's never missed a day of work. And I called him up that night, and I said, "Dad, I've never asked you for anything in my life, and I know that you've never missed a day of work, but like, I just shot somebody, and I need you to come get this gun right now and this money before the police show up." And he was like, "What?" And I was like, I told him again. He said, "Were you at home?" And I said, "No, I wasn't at home. I was somewhere else." And he was like, "You're the stupidest fucking kid I've ever fucking heard of." And then he shows up, and my dad has always just wanted me to do right. And I always did wrong. And I always have all these get rich quick crazy ideas. We're gonna do this now. I just need one thing to work. I need one thing to be successful, and I'm gonna be okay. But I'm gonna try it all till I figure it out. And but I'm all in on everything that I do, and I take it to the moon as much as I can. And he was like, he showed up, and he took the gun, and then I handed him a backpack full of cash. And my dad was very, I'm not proud of me at this point. And he opened up the bag of cash. And he was like, "You're gonna be just fine, son. We're gonna get you right out of there. You don't tell him nothing, and he's gonna be okay. I'm so proud of you." Terrible. We get to the, I turn myself in, and my dad was the only one that stuck through and showed up to all my court dates and everything, even when, because everybody would show all my friends and everything for all my past stuff, but it was really looking like my life was over this time, and everybody jumped ship. And then the city that I'm in made it seem like I was on a rampage that night, accusing me of all that guy's stuff. So they were like, "A man was on a rampage throughout the community of hope, da, 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 da." And they put my name and picture across the news for 2 days. Like, I was the guy beating people up and choking people out. And I
Oh my
wasn't. That guy just ran into
gosh.
me. And I almost had a case against the city, but they had 48 hours to fix their news and make their adjustments. But by that time, everybody had seen that it was me, and the whole community thought that I was trash. And like, yeah, so it was a bad time. And then going through that, while I was out on bond for that, I had an hour-long standoff with a SWAT team and got caught with another gun and a backpack full of drugs and a bunch of money. And it was over $100, but it was the principle of the matter, and I was a stupid kid, and it was just dumb. They wanted me to sign over all my guns, and I collected guns, and my brother had turned 18 a couple of days before, and instead of signing over a bunch of guns to the state of Michigan, I signed them over to my little brothers. "Here, you're a new collector now." And then I kept this tiny little pistol, which was a 25 ACP, because I was like, it's not even a real gun. It's like a BB gun. It's cute. Like, and I Yeah, it was not. It was complete stupidity. I actually got both of those guns back in evidence boxes recently. And yeah, so that happened, and like when that happened, when I came out from there, I started Facebook for the first time, and my Facebook was flooded from people that were looking for me my whole life from high school. Apparently, they were like, "Dude, I just always wondered what happened to you," because I would walk around high school with 20 grand on me, and like everybody just wanted to know what the hell ever happened to that guy. And I just always was like that. So my shame, telling people how I felt and like how I really feel, I don't think you guys understand how much counseling, anger management, cognitive, like group therapies. I've gone to rehab twice recently for drinking. That's how I had to quit drinking. I never thought that I would have to go these routes. But like the honesty part is literally what makes you grow. You got to stop being fake with people. You just got to be yourself and be who you are. You're either a good person or you're a bad person. Everybody does bad things. Everybody's a sinner. He
Right.
who is without sin cast the first stone. Couldn't nobody throw that rock. Like, and you're either you grow from it or you don't. You know what I mean? And you either learn from your mistakes or you keep making them and your life sucks. And I've had to mature a lot really fast. I've never been charged as a kid as they charged me as an adult since I was 14 years old. I was in jail with grown people. And I was tiny. I didn't even hit puberty yet. I didn't even have pubic hair. Like it was, and I'm in there with adults like not knowing how to jail. And they're teaching me how to shower and they're teaching me how to live in there and they're teaching me how to do this shit. And like you really all that shame. I was a picky eater before I started getting in trouble. You eat that jail food long enough, you'll eat anything. Like it's all that shame and everything goes right away when you just start realizing that everybody is not perfect, and the people that play perfect are the people you really don't want to trust because they're hiding shit. So, like, when I've never wanted to look weak though either. I've never wanted to look weak, and I've never wanted my kids to see me weak. But I also never wanted my kids to see my tattoos. Like I have sleeves of tattoos, and before my daughter was born, I looked into getting these things removed. And the only one I paid for was Benjamin Franklin over here, full of gang tattoos, and everything else was free. I paid $500 for this. I paid $12 for this one, actually. But they wanted $20,000 to remove my tattoos. I'm like, I'm doing for all this shit. I just watched this the whole first year of my daughter's life until if I didn't let her listen to no rap music. I was like so scared to mess up my kid and not have her raised like me or ever feel the hurt that I felt as a child because my parents, they had me really young. It was like, I'm just now realizing they were just kids having kids. They didn't know what they were doing. But when you're a kid, you think that the grown-ups know everything. We're all just winging it. I don't even think they really have been to the moon, honestly. There's lives. But so I just keep lying, and like it's gotten me farther with people, and like it's more genuine, I guess, and it's worked out better. Like I'm a very cussing Christian, and I just now found faith. I'm a new Christian. I'm very, very new in my faith, but I'm noticing with the church people too, everybody wants you to just be real. Because when I started going to church, it was not my environment. I'm the only one in my family that's never been baptized. All my family went to church. And when I went to baptize my daughter, I didn't know they keep records like the government. And they know where you've been baptized and where and what church and who did it and this, that, from like generations back. And they're like, "So your grandfather was baptized here and your grandmother here and they got married here and your dad is baptized here, and your uncle here, and your mom here. How come you've never been baptized? Your brothers and sisters?" So I was like, I called my dad, I was like, "Dad, so I've never been baptized." He was like, "You need to be. What?" I'm so like, when they would go to church, though, I never went to church. I would stay home and sleep in, and they were very active in the church. I was never active in the church. And I was like the black sheep in my family because I was always getting in trouble. And my brothers and sisters, I'm the only one from a broken home. When I would visit my brothers and sisters, they have mommy and daddy together, and it's a nice little home. And I never had any of that. I would go from, I never had my own bedroom, my own shit like that.
Yeah.
And so it's, I just lived, I guess, wandering aimlessly, even in faith. And like, I've recently learned, I wasn't looking for faith at all. I wasn't looking to change. I wish I would have known that only if adults get baptized after they go through some traumatic shit or like they're coming off drugs. I would have never done that. Bunch of little kids out there, and my brother was cracking. He's like, "Only people junkies do this shit." I'm like, "Dude, what the fuck? You even told me." But like, I don't know. But I wasn't looking for faith at all or anything like that. And my buddy Phil Stepnowski, best guy I know. I was the general manager of a trampoline park, Defy, and I really love working with the kids. I love helping keep people out of trouble with the kids, guiding them on the right path. And like, recently the ski mask came into like popularity in the urban community. And like, yo, I completely changed the whole place. The bad kids had run that business, taken over that business. It run four general managers out of there in the last 3 months before me. Nobody could get control of the park. They couldn't even keep the bookkeeping, the company. They were doing their deposits into a filing cabinet and just dumping the cash into a file. When I got there, there was like 20 grand just piled up ridiculously in a filing cabinet with a lock on it. So I'm like, dude, like, you guys didn't steal all this shit? It's not even a company. I was getting ran by 16 and 17-year-olds who just needed a job and didn't quit on them. All the managers were quitting. The kids were still sweeping the floor, so the business stayed open. So when I got there, it was a lot of fun to be able to help people and like really work with the community. It was my most, so when I went to the hospital, the very first time when I first met my wife and I had that alcohol poisoning, they severed my radial nerve and I couldn't open my hand for almost 3 years.
Oh yeah. My gosh.
It was crazy. So I keep this here as a reminder. I had to wear this for like the last 6 months and these springs would open my fingers for me. But for 3 years, I was stuck like this. Like,
Oh my gosh.
Like, I looked ridiculous. Like, and people were making fun of me. Do it with your strong hands. So I stirred the mashed potatoes with my strong hand. That movie. Like, it was terrible. And then my wife had to deal with all this. Like, I was always a strong, able body, super, like, and then she's dealing with the worst depression. I'm one-handed. You ain't looking cool. I don't care how cool you are. You're not looking cool. You're like this everywhere you go. Like, I was just, man, it killed me. And I was working at the District 5 for the first time out of construction. And I was working at the trampoline park. And I met this guy who just kept wanting to pray for me and always wanted to pray for me. I was such a bad alcoholic. I'd work there all day and go home and drink a half gallon of tequila. And then show up to work the next day, still breathalyzing, probably 0.8. I had one on my keychain. And when we would shut that mug down, it was a game. Like, and I would wake up breathalyzing like a 1.0 or a 0.10. And I would just function like that. And I would have to drink to keep it going so my body didn't shut down. And I'm sure it smells like alcohol. I don't even know how I function like that. But Phil just always wanted to pray for me. Never judged me. Always wanted to talk to me. Love me. Hey, brother, you want to go out to eat sometime? And I honestly thought this guy was an undercover guy. Like, I thought he was a cop. I was like, this motherfucker is too nice, he's too good, and he just wants to hang out too damn hard. And I didn't trust him at all. But what my goal was for the last, like, 7 years, 8 years, since I got in that last trouble and everything, and I went through it. I was on the golf league with my judge. Man, I went through the ring. Yes, it was terrible. And he's a recovering alcoholic. So every time we were on the golf league, I would be buying him shots and making him say no to being an asshole because, like, he's a judge. So, and I hate judges and authority because I did all that time on probation as a kid. So I was like, it was just a bad thing. And I would be on the golf course. So I went golfing one time. Loved it. The coolest thing ever. Only sport you can legally drink and drive. Like, I changed all of my whole attire up from dressing like a hip-hop thug to throwing all that shit away and going buying shorts that were above the knee and golf clothes. And like, I went the next day. I spent all my free time golfing. And so we did the golf thing and I sucked. I absolutely was garbage at golfing, and I did it with my uncle, who's a heavy drinker, and we did it as like, it's our drinking day and our time away from the ladies, and we're gonna go have fun in the golf. It was so much fun, and I was broken out at 90 in 9 holes every game, and I'm like, I can't even hit the damn ball. So, I just love my energy. The judge. I'd be out there, and like I said, I love guns. I have my CPL. I buy a new gun every week, be out there, check out this new gun I got, guys. So the judge, when I came in front of him, shoot, dude, at first he was cool about it. And then he wanted me to pay 30% of my income or 330 something a week or something for whatever's greater is what was in bold print. And I own the dispensary. I just opened the dispensary. And I was like, oh, this is an extortion damn near from the government. They want whatever's greater. Why? Like, that's just a tax reward? So I was like, all right, then I put myself on the payroll and I'm cutting my own checks. And I paid myself the least amount possible. And I was paying the court the very least amount I could possibly pay for the penny. And he didn't like that at all. And he was like, Mr. Laredo, isn't it convenient that you cut your own checks and you pay us the least amount? I said, yeah. And he said, I like to leave everybody off better off when they leave me than when I found them. I said, dude, I own 6 companies, 2 houses, 3 cars. I have employed 15 families. I'm like, dude, you're fucking everything up. And he said, with you, you don't have a financial problem. You have an attitude problem and a problem with authority. So I want to fix that for you right now, and this, that, and the third. And I was like, dude in front of me just pissed you off. Like, and now you're about to do this to me. And I was arguing with him, and he gave me a year, maxed me out. So I said that to say, where were we at before that?
That's it with Alex for this episode. We will continue the rest of the conversation in the next one. Thanks for listening to Journey to the Rise. Please do follow us on your podcast app so you have the latest episode downloaded. If you want to follow us on Instagram or Facebook, you can find us at Journey to the Rise Podcast. And remember to be kind to yourself. Fill your cup with love. Because it makes it easier to be kind to others. This episode was researched, produced, and edited by Girl Boss Productions. I'm Lucretia, and you've been listening to Journey to the Rise.